All right, we're live. We're going live. We're going live.
We'll do it live.
We'll do it live. We'll do it live. I think that's just gone out, by the way. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Black Art Podcast. Yeah. Woo! With me, I'm Lloyd. This is
Jake still.
Jacob here. As always, Jake appearing in a cloud of smoke.
Yeah.
Like a majestic animal on a misty morning. Prowling through the jungle.
Prowling.
And then it just turned out to be Jake. You know. How was your week, man?
Pretty lame, to be honest with you. There was one amazing thing that happened that's not magic related, though.
Well, I'm all ears.
Okay. It's sorry, I'm just sorting out the audio because I went a bit tinny.
We got people in the chat while you're doing that. We got Carter's Crazes, David Peace, Michael Shaw, DS, Lorenzo, Santi, who says saludos desde España.
España. Nice. Well, I got an air fryer and it's the best thing that's ever happened in my life.
Dude, I wish I'd known. I just gave one away.
No, I got it for like 50 quid from Heron.
Whoa, what are you making with it?
I haven't made anything with it yet, apart from just like frozen stuff, but it's great.
Yeah, they are a game changer, aren't they?
So excited to put just an absolute ton of vegetables in there and tofu and stuff like that.
I've eaten broccoli, rice, and chicken for 3 days straight. Like a little bit of flavor on the chicken, but everything else plain. And I am I'm losing the will to live.
Keep at it, man. Keep at it.
I gotta keep at it. What'd you get? Ninja foodie? Ninja fryer?
No, it's just a cheap. I don't even know if it's branded. Works. That's all I care about.
Yeah, that's all that matters. Well, if everyone didn't notice, we're doing this live right now. Coming at you to your living rooms, your bedrooms, your cars, wherever you are in the world. We decided instead of me and Jake recording it and then me having to export it and then re-upload it and do all these other crazy things, we're just going to do it live. It'd be easier.
You're lazy, is what you're saying.
I am very lazy. This is true. This is very true. But today I asked Jake, I said, what should we talk about in today's episode? You know, we've been on a very mystical journey for the past few weeks, months. Has it turned into months? Where are we? Episode 16 now?
Yeah, episode 16.
What's that? 4, 8. That's 4 months. This is our 4 month special, potentially. This is the first third of the year. A third of the year, dude. We've been going.
Not bad, is it?
That's pretty amazing. Well, anyway, Jake came back to me and he said, why don't we talk about visual magic for a change?
I think any magician worth their salt will always admit that you're forever a student. And I don't trust people who say that they're masters.
Yeah. I'm always a student. I actually believe I'm the lowest on the rank as well.
Oh, yeah. I'm in the lowest tier. But something that maybe the past decade or so that I've neglected is visual magic. I will enjoy making the gimmicks. I've watched your channel for a long time. I enjoy making the gimmicks. Every now and again, when something catches my eye, I'll purchase it. But to be honest with you, if we were to talk about theory behind visual magic or any of that stuff, even the performance, the patter, the movements, I know nothing. Nil, nada.
You know, it kind of surprises me what surprised me is that getting to know you through YouTube and the Society of Secrets, I realized that you really are a mentalist at heart. And a lot of what you do is like more hardcore mentalism, I'd say, than a lot of mentalists. Like a lot of mentalists live in that realm of trick, where you are like, you almost have that crossover between a mentalist and a medium, I'd say. In not a medium being a terrible person, I mean like the spiritual side of stuff.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Part of my channel, because I wasn't really into that stuff, at least publicly, was a shock. But so now it's maybe an opportunity where I can talk about some stuff to do with visual magic and maybe, you know, twist your arm a bit more to come over to the dark side.
Well, I mean, you know, if anyone were to look at even just social media, I'll still post occasionally visual magic because that's what does well on there. I'm not too bothered about doing well, but I enjoy the pursuit of a nice visual. And I enjoy coming up with a gimmick. I mean, I've made plenty of gimmicks to do with mentalism that we've sent videos back and forth making things. It's just, I guess, to really understand, not necessarily illusions, but like a visual piece of street magic, but similar to the stuff that you make. Because as much as I've followed it, and as much as I've made a bunch of your gimmicks, I don't feel comfortable saying, oh, well, I could come up with something similar.
I get that. I mean, ultimately, I guess you just love the art of deception in whatever way it comes. All just because you're focused on mentalism doesn't mean you can't love visual magic too, right?
Yeah, of course. I think the world is never binary, is it? It's never black or white. It's all shades of grey. And I like existing in that muddy little grey puddle.
Love it. Absolutely love it. So before we delve into the topics, people commenting, let's see who we got in the live stream. We have Joseph, we got Murphy's Magic Studio, and I'm guessing it's Javi who commented that because he said, beautiful Spanish dude. Santi said, I'm a magician from Spain's Got Talent. Wow.
Nice.
Bloody hell. Thanks for tuning in, man.
Why are you watching
Brandon from Canada, Sam Coleman, Stu Batman, Tom Gibbons, Muppets on Meds, Lorenzo. We got everybody in here. Do you guys have any questions relating to or regarding visual magic in any way, shape, or form? Do you have any things to challenge us about on visual magic and everything in between? Do you prefer doing visual magic without gimmicks somehow, or do you prefer to do it with gimmicks? Let us know. Comment in the chat window. And yeah, let's dive sort of straight into it. So, Jake, first of all, do you do any visual magic? And if you do, what is the visual magic that you do?
So I guess it depends on what your definition of visual magic is, because a lot of magic has a visual element to it, even if it's just
snap chain.
Yeah. Anything at all can have a visual element to it. There are parts of mentalism where the reveal has been engineered to be visual.
Yeah.
But I think maybe what I'm talking about is the super, how do you like to describe it? You know, slow motion, hyper visual kind of. Your bread and butter like that you're so good at.
I think I'm probably just the person that spent the most time on it.
Does
it make me
room.
Good? It just means that I've put 20 years of my life into doing it. Well, more. You know, what's really interesting that we're bringing this up today is that there was a Jerks article written recently, and I've just picked up the psychology of magic as well. And I guess it's kind of why it's been in both of our peripherals, because I shared with you an idea after talking about this, but they run a test. The Jerks run a test, at least, I believe. And they tested an audience to show them a visual color change versus a non-visual color change, right? And I believe from memory, that was such a terrible color change, a king to a jack of hearts. So visual would be with a gimmick the way they did it. So maybe, okay, I just literally cut to exactly the same two cards again by accident. So visual being like this, maybe, and then non-visual would happen out of sight. And from the research, from my understanding, it seems like the people who perceived the visual gimmick color changing didn't respond as strongly to the people who seen the unvisual trick. And, you know, from the descriptions and the write-up on the Jerks article and from everything we sort of know about magic and modern day perceptions of what goes around the world anymore. You know, like years ago, people would have no idea if an image was Photoshopped, right? You'd have to be an expert at Photoshop to tell something's Photoshopped. Now, kids can look at an image and they can tell when there's the pixels on the edge are not perfect, if they've been stretched or if they've been replicated. And people have such a keen eye these days with anything visual, because we live in such a visual world and so much of that visual world has been exposed. And I don't just mean magic wise, I just mean in terms of what people understand is possible and not possible, from all things such as Snapchat filters to videos that in 3 seconds explain how something works quicker than people have been able to understand, you know, up until this point in time. And so basically maybe it's that the thinking is that maybe when people see something now, they have so much information, because it's 2023, information is just forced down people's throats, that they can start to backtrack it quicker, or they see so much online and in the real world, which seems unbelievable, and then is exposed as being, you know, people see color changing cars and they understand it's thermochromic paints now. People understand that you can see, you know, black windows on tinted windows on a car that then turn clear. Like all of this stuff, which magicians have been using as their secret weapons, you know, which is a lot of it's public, but magicians have been using it to their advantage for so long, is now kind of common knowledge. So yeah. Even if someone doesn't necessarily understand that it's a flap card doing the trick, they can think to themselves, well, I've seen something that does that, something like that anyway. It could just be an e-ink screen, you know, like a little, we have phones. All we'd have to do to do a color change is get a smaller phone, put that on as the top card of the deck, and it wouldn't be too far of a stretch. So, you know, we're almost like, sometimes we can potentially think our audience are naive to realize what's possible, or the fact that some of the stuff that we're showing them isn't as impressive as what is openly discussed as science.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right. So with that being said, when they get shown something like a double lift color change and it changes, and this is like me sort of regurgitating what was on the Jerks blog, but there's an element of, because they can't see it, they can't see how to understand it. They can't pick it apart visually. Right, or from the visual clues they've been given, and it lies in that realm of mystery, which is one of the only last, it's the, you know, some of the last remaining human mysteries until they get solved on TikTok or another place on Reddit, if that's gonna be around anymore, who knows, until June 30th. So with that being like sort of the current topic of debate, do you think there's a world for visual magic now, even after what's just been said? And if so, how do you think that should look? And are there moments where visual magic can top unvisual magic if you're trying to make someone believe in magic?
Mm. So obviously when I talk about visual magic, I saw someone comment a little bit earlier. I think it might have been Stu Batman. Isn't all magic visual? And to an extent, yeah, there's a point there that a lot of magic is visual, and I'm certainly no stranger to having creative magic that has visual elements. I saw Lorenzo point out that Sigadex is up on the wall there, and half of the routines that I do with Sigadex are visual based. So it's not necessarily like an aversion or an absolute ignorance. It is this self-contained close-up street magic visual style that came out about maybe the past 10 to 15 years or so. Besides the odd release here and there, I feel like I just missed out on a chunk of history. But well, go on.
Well, all magic is visual to an extent, but a lot of it, like for me, my definition of visual magic then is that is seeing the color change, and then this is not seeing the color change. So what I mean by expressly visual, not just being able to see the deck of cards or because when you put a coin in your hand and it vanishes, that's not visual magic.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so many people do get confused with that. So they are seeing a coin go into a hand and they are seeing the coin is no longer in the hand. But to me, my express definition of visual magic is that you actually see the magic happen. That's why for the last 2/3 of my life, I've focused on them on slow motion magic where you see it happen.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to say something's visual when it's not.
Yeah. I think there's always going to be a market for that specific kind of magic. There hasn't been, you know, more than 2 or 3 months at a time where there's at least one trailer that comes out where you send it to someone and say, watch this. Like, look how cool this looks.
Yeah.
I think there's always going to be a market for that because it sells well. It looks amazing.
Yeah, very true. Is there a time? Well, first of all, let's talk about some of the great pieces of visual magic, excluding my own. But, you know, there's certain tricks that can't be done. They probably could. I'm thinking like the things like, I would consider Healed and Sealed a pretty visual trick. You see that can visually restore, and to try to do that trick unvisually would not be as impressive. Although they could probably feel that can expand in, right? You got things like Crazy Man's handcuffs, which no way would be as good if it was done sight unseen.
What?
Put these rubber bands on your hands. I'm going to link them over. Close your eyes. Ta-da. Yeah. I don't know. That could be kind of cool, but they'd still feel you pulling on the band. So even if in some circumstances it's not as powerful because it's not. And David Peace just made a really interesting point, which is that he said, I think it's because the spectator can guess what's about to happen during a visual change.
Mm.
But a hidden change is more of a surprise, and the surprise gets the reaction.
Yeah.
Envelope is a great visual trick. Good point. Yeah, David, that's another good point from David there. I wonder if it makes more of an impact if you do tell them what's about to happen then. So if it was a double lift, you say, this card is going to become your card, you know, then that kills. I wonder if that's just as impactful. I mean, a lot of magic is about surprise elements.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there is plenty of routines I've seen where the whole setup is, I'm going to do this right now, watch, and it's done. But yeah, in terms
a lot of magicians are just walking instruction manuals. Yeah. Now you will see me put the coin in my hand, and now you will see it's gone. Javier asked a great question, which is good for you to answer. He said, how can you make a mentalism effect have an impactful visual moment?
So with mentalism, the vast majority of the effect is the revelation. So the visual has to relate to the revelation for it to be impactful, surely. But I guess it's a strange one, because sometimes the visual element can kind of take away from the fact that you've supposedly just done something which is more impressive than the visual side of things.
Yeah.
But, you know, if someone were to be concentrating on a name and then you pulled out like a little bottle, and when you shook it, there was a piece of paper in there, and they took it out and it had the name on. Like, that's fairly visual. I don't know, but is it too much? Does that take away from the fact that you've just guessed the name if they watch something appear in a bottle, or not guess the name, obviously?
I don't know. What if you like had a vape and you blew smoke and you said, I'm going to turn around and I want you to write 3 of the letters from the word you're thinking of in the air at random, any 3 letters. You come back and you say, blow the smoke away. So you come back and they've seen themselves write some letters in the air, but they've blown it away. And then you're going to pretend to read it from the remnants of the smoke that's in the room, or that you like inhale that smoke and try to regurgitate the letters that they said, maybe, which could be quite cool. That could be quite cool, couldn't it? It's not visual, but not too visual. I don't know.
It could be quite cool. I guess a lot of my trouble with it is this blurred line between what is visual and what isn't visual.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, especially with things like this where we discuss theory, we're kind of hard and fast with definitions and a little bit loose sometimes. But I did like your definition of it, you know, being it's directly like, what did you say? It can't have been that memorable if I can't remember.
I don't know. Well, it's more like when you expressly magic, but I always laugh at magic companies that put up a product and it says, this is like ultra visual. And it'll be like a cup with a ball under it. And they lift the cup up and the ball's gone. And it says like, this is a visual piece of magic. And like, it's not. That ball did not vanish in front of my eyes. It vanished hidden.
It kind of just became a trailer catch-all at some point, didn't it?
Yeah. Go through some magic sites, pick up a bunch of, open up a bunch of random tabs on products, and you'll see like 80% of them use visual in the wrong context, which always makes me laugh.
No, it's a good point.
Maybe that's just because I'm petty. Not cray petty, just petty.
There's some good comments here as well.
Yeah, read some out.
So Raven 186 says it tends to be more spectacular because you are led down a path to what's going to happen and still get fooled/surprised. So that's good. The element of handholding leading to it actually being fooling is interesting.
Yeah. Andrew Nina asks, and also Luna Love God says, can I show her a trick? I don't know what I can show. What can I do?
Do it, Lloyd. Dance monkey.
I suppose. Can you show a trick?
Oh, yeah. With what? What have I got close to me?
Let me see. I've got a broken straw. I've got a pencil, even. That would be better. I've got a Stanley knife. I've got a broken straw and a rubber band. Let me see if I can do this. Well, except. So I'm going to take the straw on my fingers, take the band around my fingers, and put the straw through it like this. And then hopefully, one, two, can melt through. How is that, Luna Love God? Are you the real one from Harry Potter as well? We can try and put it back through as well. It's your time to shine, Jake.
I literally don't think I've got anything close to me apart from the receipts.
Oh, some of that stuff was so good. Andrew Niner asks, do you think your audience reaction to visual magic is better than something that is not visual but just as strong? Well, that's kind of what the jerks... Oh, yes, Jake, go.
Oh, no, I was going to do it in the background and not not have attention called to it.
So good. So good.
No, it's not at all.
But yeah, that's kind of what the jerk said, is that they tested a group of people, showed them a color change with a flap card, and then showed them a double lift change.
Hmm.
And they reacted stronger when they couldn't see the magic for that effect. I think every effect's different, you know, if it was like a healed and sealed, like we said, but
probably, yeah.
Oftentimes I try to inject visual magic into an extra element of visual in there, into an effect. And oftentimes I do that for like the sake of like exploration, you know, just because sometimes you'll find that there's some plots or some effects where it's always been strictly done in non-visual terms.
Yeah.
And just seeing sometimes if there is something that hasn't been scratched upon can lead you into some pretty interesting areas. And I've got a fair amount of work that sort of exposes that, sort of highlights that. A good premise would be, is the ambitious card better visual or non-visual, right? So if you put the five of spades in the deck, is it better to see it come to the top and visually, or is it better to see it rise up visually? You know what I mean? If you see it come like this or something. I'm going to do the Sean Fields ambitious riser, but angle.
I think the best reaction I've ever got from Ambitious Card was the old one that was in that David Blaine with their cards bent. That's still my favorite.
See, now I would consider that visual because they see it pop up through.
Yeah.
That does seem to be the strongest element of that routine. So it would almost seem counter to the argument that visual magic isn't as strong as non-visual magic. But again, it's effect dependent, I suppose.
Yeah, it's effect dependent. It's performer dependent.
I wonder if the question is more so, maybe it's more impressive, but is it easier to figure out?
Oh, that's a good point.
You know what I mean?
So some of these questions are really hard to answer when you can't look at it from the viewpoint of a spectator or a participant. Because, you know, like those images where once you see the image, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like magic theory is a little bit like that, and it's, I can't fathom what would I like more.
It's like one of those things, like once you know how it works, like in the tutorial Tuesday I put up yesterday, the slow motion version of the restore just doesn't work for magicians. You can't, if you're a magician, you can't unsee it. You know, like the... It's just too obvious to us. There's no way we can see that as a fun thing. But the lay people I show it to are like, what the fuck do you just do? You know, it's the curse. It's the curse that we have.
Yeah. And I guess the prevalence of obviously social media and video means that you do have to tend to lean towards a more visual element if you want to get any traction online, which I know you've found quite a lot with your YouTube videos, like which ones get more views and which ones are better received, kind of.
Yeah, I suppose so. I also think, though, that it's not necessary in this niche of magic, right? If I look at Spidey as a great example. He blew up doing a lot of mentalism on his channel, but he grew even bigger, I believe, or faster at least, doing his body language.
Yeah, that's true.
Stuff, you know, so it depends on how you position yourself to that. If you went like, okay, I'm just a mentalism channel, I suppose we've got to grab people's interest in a way. Like Darren Brown, for example, he doesn't do any visual magic, really. Yeah, he's got to be like the most well-known mystery act of at least the UK.
Mm.
Would you say?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's theatre, so there's always going to be visual elements, but it's not visual magic per se.
It's not magic, a lot of it. Apart from his card to box, which he did in the last tour, which is the best.
It was really, really good in person.
Was it? I haven't seen it in person.
Yeah, they framed it a little bit differently on the recording to in person. Obviously, they had to, but the way it was edited and stuff was great.
As a spectator, did you go with a layperson?
Semi-layperson. It was an ex.
Were they completely blown away by it?
No. But I did see dozens and dozens of people outside because I specifically wanted to stand outside after and hear what they had to say. And a large portion of them were fried.
Yes, that's what it's all about. Let's see some comments. Where are we at? Chris James says, I always get better reactions from non-visual magic when I, in person, I think it means, in person. Yeah. Video, it's all visual stuff. Stu Batman says, would you say that a trick is better when you know how it's done, yet it still blows your mind, or blowing your mind when you don't know how it works?
Two different types of pleasure.
So does he mean seeing something and then being fooled by it the second, like learning the secret and then being fooled by it, or just appreciating the method? Is that what you mean? Is that what you mean, Stu? Michael Shaw asks, is there a non-visual magic that still feels visual to the audience? For example, my most asked for trick is Blood Link by Justin Miller, which is essentially a non-visual ring link.
Hmm.
Is there non-visual magic that still feels visual to the audience?
Yeah. So, I mean, even the most basic card tricks in the past, I have done them and people have swore blind that they were holding the three of clubs when they went. So there's got to be some kind of latent visual element to them that's obviously a bit different, but...
Would you class stigmata as a visual mentalism trick? I would, yeah, because they see that reveal appear, don't they?
That's an interesting one, actually, because I was thinking earlier, and, you know, a blister effect is not something I do often, but it's still one of my favourite reveals. And it's not really visual, but they think it's visual.
Yeah.
It's a strange one.
Yeah, that is a strange one. Sam Coleman asks, could the introduction of more four-dimensional / surrounding virtual environments, VR, etc., with eye tracking, mean the misdirection used in-person magic could be used in video?
I mean, to an extent, it already is. There are definitely certain magic specials I've watched where, you know, it's probably done in about four or five different Darren Brown things where it's like, and here's what you didn't realize the first time you watched it. In the background, there was a bicycle and, you know.
I wonder if he means combining VR, like glasses, like an Apple Vision Pro, to aid in your misdirection, maybe. I'm always very conscious of using stuff like AR in performance because... I feel at the minute, at least anyway, it's so easy to, if they see that you're using AR in some context, then it's easy to dismiss the entire effect or method. Method is, oh, well, he had a camera or it's AR. I don't know how he did it. They are, you know, but it depends on in what the context is. It's like, are you wearing a headset and then it's helping you misdirect things, or like you're saying with Darren, when he shows a video of like, this is what you could have won.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? I mean, I don't think I would ever heavily mess too much with that stuff unless the occasion really called for it. If it was super relevant in some way, like you say, once there's the tiniest seed of doubt, I mean, it just kind of kills it. It's why you have to be, I think app magic has to be thought out so thoroughly. You know, something like Chronoforce Pro works because it's just completely natural and organic. But if there was the slightest thing wrong with the app, I think it'd fail at the first hurdle.
Yeah, true. I'm going back through the chat because I'm trying to catch up on every one that's in here. Joseph W asks, do you have any tips for creating original gimmicks?
Well, you're the gimmick man. Answer the boy.
Oh, me? Okay. You've showed me some pretty interesting stuff, though. Tips for creating original gimmicks. Yeah, I do. I mean, a big one is to give yourself a list of methods that you're not allowed to use. So if you want to create a gimmick for a color change, look at all the existing gimmicks that are out there and write those down as the do not touch list. Because from there, you can't recreate something then. You can't just, it has to be original. If every method that you already know exists out there. The other tip that I have for creating original gimmicks / magic, visual magic, you know, definitely, but magic in general, is so much magic is created based off of the aesthetic foundations that are outdated. So, or things that are not natural. For example, I'm looking for like a coin. I don't have a coin near me, but I talk about this in the coin magic masterclass on Patreon, which is, if I got a ring instead, but what do I have? It stuck to a rubber band. Trying to get something to show. Any coins? Right.
Very coins. Briefly, before you start speaking again, just apologies to the Spotify listeners.
Yes. Yeah, true. But okay, for anyone listening on Spotify, I'll talk it through. When people go to create coin vanishes, right? A lot of people be like, right, I want to come up with the next retention vanish. So what my parameters are. I'm going to take the coin, I'm going to place it into my hand, and it's got to vanish somehow ultra cleanly, retention vanish style. And you could imagine there's thousands of magicians or young creator or creators in general, not young creators, thousands of people all wondering how can they create the best retention vanish, right? With the parameters of holding the coin like this and now making it change. And something that I actively try to do my entire career is to think, actually, nobody puts coins in their hand like this, right? That's just, if you were to borrow a coin off a friend, you wouldn't, and you needed to hand it to somebody on this side of the room, you wouldn't go like this. So a lot of people are spending so much, I mean like lifetime's worth of work looking at how to create like coins vanish unnaturally. This is not natural. When people have seen like trailers for products that say the most organic natural coin vanishes you've ever seen, they're not. They're far from it. In fact, they probably are the most unnatural coin vanishes in the world. And I'll be shocked. And I have friends who are the best in the world at doing this. So there's no disservice to them whatsoever. It's just my style of creating. So I do want to put that across. But for me, a natural looking coin vanish would be, and I talk about this in the Patreon, but like ask your friends to pick out some coins. So take some change and pick up a coin and hand it to you and watch what they do. And however their hands move, that's what you need to replicate. Okay.
Yeah.
So if they get a handful of change and they go, there you go. And they, that's it. They'd like from the handful of change, they like manipulate one into your hand like that. Right. And it's all over the place. As much as you don't want to hear it, that's natural. And so what I like to do is look for what people do it for real and see in which positions or movements, which aesthetics that people do, which ones do I think I can exploit a moment in? And often I find myself focusing more on this sort of stuff, this type of thinking, than the actual method, because 90% of it is just, for me, 90% of original creation comes from looking at the things that nobody else is realizing. Because it's the hard part is that we don't notice when we're talking to someone and they blink. Right, because we're just so in tune with it. When somebody picks up a coin normally from a handful of change, we don't even think to pay attention to it. Like, oh, actually, that's something I can exploit because we're so used to it. That's why we're so fascinated when magicians do it in funny ways. We think, oh, how can I try? Because it stands out.
Yeah.
So when it comes to creating original gimmicks, it's the same thing. Often I'll think, well, like, for example, like a T&R, a lot of work that I put into the T&R sort of plot comes from, if you ask any, and this is a challenge, when I used to work at a different magic company, I said to a friend of mine, Dwayne, I set a challenge, and I was like, when people, what I've been doing is handing people playing cards and ask them to tear them up. And everyone I handed a playing card to, and I said, tear it up, you know, not just in half, but tear it up. They would just take it, and they would just do that.
Yeah.
Right. And from there, I was thinking, well, that's how I need to restore the card. Because if I start taking the card and folding it like this, I'm being unnatural before I even start. Plus, if I can begin naturally, first thing is they're not going to think that I'm doing anything suspicious, as opposed to taking 20 minutes to fold it perfectly. But secondly, nobody is exploring these methods. Well, not nobody, they probably are. There is for lots of different effects, but whatever the effect is, TNR, coin and bottle, anything, if I'm approaching it from a different point of view, from as whatever magic that I can see existing out there, from the classic positioning and holding of objects and the ways magicians do things. Like, there's a great video from Titanus and Javier of how magicians like handle a dollar bill and all this funny stuff, which is completely unnatural, and that's what the joke is. But if I'm looking at handling things unlike any of the magicians, but more like the people that I'm performing to, then yeah, now I have this, they call it in business, blue ocean territory. And suddenly, if I say I'm not going to use those methods and I'm not going to handle it those ways, oftentimes I don't find that it's hard to create original stuff, because it's more like I'm just first to the post. It's not even about having that creative brain mindset. It's just about giving myself, it's almost like everybody is trying to solve the same maths problem, right? If this was considered a maths problem, right, everyone's trying to solve that same problem. But what I'm doing is I'm giving myself a new problem which gives me the same solution, which is a coin disappearing, but I'm giving myself a much easier to digest brief, and I'm the only person taking the test. So therefore, when I do get to the right answer, I get hailed to having a creative original gimmick, and it's just because no one else is even looking at it, really.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think I've said in the past, you're really, really good at finding like this pure, untouched, virgin ground.
Nice. Well, it's the same with you in a lot of your creations. One of the first things that made me like my ears prick up when we started talking was that you, I won't say what it is, but you have a presentation on PK touches, which I've seen a million of, and yours is immediately like just on its own, superior, unique. And I was like, oh, okay, this guy is, you know, he's got the ability to see beyond the, you know, the same things as everyone else.
Thank you, dude. I appreciate that. And one day I will do something with that effect.
Yeah, you got to do that. So David Peace asks, actually, can you read some of the comments out? Because I've done a lot of talking. I feel like I'm taking up the airwaves.
Yeah, go on. You take a deep breath. Have a drink of water. Relax. So, David Peace said, yeah, what would be fun is to use AR in the routine, but when they take off the device, they see it was actually real. But I feel like that kind of that kind of plot, it's been used with something else, and it did work really well. What was it? I'll keep thinking. Miko says, if you have a TV in the video, it could react to different sounds or the lights in the room, maybe slow change. Spectators will not respond. I don't know what that is. There in relation to
if you
to
have
filming?
A TV in the video, it could react to different sounds or lights in the room, maybe slow change that spectators will not respond. Yeah, I think it's just I can't understand that because I'm an idiot.
Is it in relation to misdirection or film and magic on video or
potentially?
Yeah, let us know.
Anyam is super hyped. Hello, sir. Love hearts. Magic has given me recognition. It's a great art. Well, magic is great art. What's up, Anyam?
Nice, dude. Sam Coleman said, I realize now that the VR question was a weird salad. I meant that if someone is watching a video in 3D space, they can't see the whole screen at once, allowing for more misdirection, perhaps. Yeah. I don't know how long it's going to be until those type of videos are completely universal and kind of penetrated, you know, mainstream entertainment enough to, but I know plenty of people who have the PlayStation headsets or Oculus headsets, or, and they do watch YouTube 3D and stuff like that. It's interesting because it would actually be really cool to watch some stuff like that, because I've seen recordings where they were recorded on a 3D camera. And so, you know, the framing itself that's shown in the video would be zooming back and forth between participant and performer. We watched something last week. We were watching a video and I can't remember the performer's name. Is it Justin Insight?
Justin Insight.
That was filmed from, on a 3D camera, and it looked amazing. I'd love to see that actually in a 3D video with a headset on.
That's a good show. Yeah, that would be very cool. Be good to watch. Is he saying like to watch Magic back? Here's an interesting one. So Sam, off of Sam's comment, he got me thinking. What you could use is almost like, you know, exactly what he's saying, like using it for misdirection, but maybe in terms of a blackout option. So say somebody was in a living room and there was a coffee table in that living room, and they put the VR headset on and you say, I'm gonna get you to think of an object, right? So it plays a short video. Now, if it was the Apple Vision headset, they can still see the surroundings around them and the small video plays in front of them, yeah? So maybe this coffee table's off to the side, and it's going to force them to think of a vase of flowers, right? This video, whatever it is, okay? But the cool thing is, if it's VR, what you could do is you could make it seem like nothing is happening on the coffee table. So it's basically masking the coffee table with an image of the same coffee table, but empty, allowing you to position the vase of flowers on it. So from their point of view, they are watching a small image that says, you know, think of a number between 1 and 20, make it 2 digits, add the digits up, take them away. Now remember what objects on this list from 1 to 10, and the ninth one is flowers. And then, so they work it out, whatever, it's flowers. To them, they're still in this essentially empty room. There's just them, the four walls and a coffee table. But now when they untap the VR button, they could see the vase of flowers like appears. And you basically used it to mask out what's real.
That's definitely possible with some of the stuff that Apple's coming out with soon.
Yeah, it totally is.
I watched that video on your recommendation the other day. Is it Marky? Is his name?
Marcus,
yeah, his video on the Apple headset, it looks insane.
So good. Did you see RK's comment here? RK Magic says, off topic, but what are your thoughts on Darren Brown's new show, Unbelievable? It's interesting because the cast is mostly actors. I believe the only cast member with a magic background is Simon Lipkin.
I didn't realize Simon Lipkin was in it. That's cool.
Yeah, I didn't even know he had actors in there or anything.
Yeah, well, it's not him. It's a Darren Brown kind of presents Unbelievable, a show that he's written and he's directing.
What's the? I have no idea. I have no. What's it about?
No one really knows. All the copy says essentially is there's going to be some performers. I think there's maybe like not an orchestra, but you know, there's maybe some musical elements to it, and it's a show, a performance. But I'm not entirely sure. The copy is very, very vague. Rory wrote a good article about it a few days ago, which has a little bit more information.
What was I going to say? I've actually seen there was an advert for actors to apply, or people to apply to be part of it, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere. Right. Yeah. Oh, I have no idea. I can't have an opinion on it because I have no idea what the show is about.
Yeah, no one does.
I'd love to know.
but what interested me is, in the back of my head, I kind of thought, oh yeah, they're saying, you know, and this isn't a show with Darren Brown. I thought that was going to be the kind of gimmick, and it was going to be like halfway through, Darren Brown pops out and he's been controlling something behind the scenes. But then I looked on it and I was looking at the tickets, very reasonably priced tickets. And I clicked on looking to purchase some in Manchester. I was just seeing what the prices were and stuff. And it did actually come up, a pop-up on the screen saying, like, please note, Darren Brown isn't in this show. So they must be, like, preempting people buying tickets and being like, where's Darren Brown?
Yeah, good shout. Because some people are massive fans. Like my wife is a huge fan, Darren. Like she would be disappointed if he wasn't in the show.
Yeah, yeah.
So hard on our opinion, but we can. It'd be nice to assume what the show is going to be about if it's not a Darren Brown based show.
Yeah, it's interesting. I honestly do not know what to expect.
Was it called Unbreakable or Unbelievable?
Unbelievable, and then I believe Lie is highlighted in the Unbelievable, maybe? Or is it Believe? I don't know. Something's highlighted, so it looks like something else.
I wonder if it's taken ordinary people, like he's done in a lot of his shows, like Hero at 30,000 Feet and things like that, and having them come up on stage, say, 6 months ago, I was... I was in a wheelchair and now I can walk again after doctor said I could never walk again. I'd severed my spinal cord. But thanks to the techniques of Darren, I can now do this. And it's not a religious experience. It's not through the help of a medium. It's purely through mind over matter. Maybe something like that. And it's about like empowering stories. I'm going to see him in 2 weeks' time.
I forgot you got tickets for that. The book signing.
Yeah, yeah. So it's 2 weeks yesterday. So it's on Tuesday, the 4th of July. And I've got the luxury special edition book. Ooh, and
lucky boy.
We signed and everything. I paid for it. I paid for it.
I know.
There was three options. There was a £55 option, like an £85 option, and a £200 option. And I just panic bought the expensive one. It's not my style to do that ever. Ever. Even if I had $10 billion in the bank, I'm still the guy that wears like clothes from 20 years ago. But for some reason, it was like, I just impulse bought it.
Yeah, I nearly did too. And I'm very glad that I didn't, because otherwise I would probably not have a home to live in currently. But I was very tempted.
So maybe he'll talk about it there. And if he does, publicly spoken about, then I can tell people here what it's about. Super interested though, but I'm so excited for this new book of his. Yeah. I really hope he starts, because it seems like it's, and especially with the lot of the promotional work he's doing is through magicians and the magic industry. I'm hoping that he's going to delve a lot into stuff that he's learned about mentalism and magic over the last 30 years, because, or 20 years off since he stopped doing like like publications for magicians like 20 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's so well known, it would like every time I see him at like do a talk at like the Session convention or like the Penguin thing, he says that he doesn't talk about the methods he uses because the public can find it. So I'm hoping he does this time around.
It is interesting, isn't it? I think this one will be closer to his like earlier first two releases. I'm hoping,
dude, it would be the bomb.
I know.
Illusionist says, you give spectators VR and he walks in some room. It can be a museum. Somehow you force some object to him, and when he takes the VR, you reveal. That's literally what I was talking about with Sam Coleman.
Yeah.
You can reveal. Yeah, that's one really good way of doing it. Or maybe it's like, maybe they pick something which could not be in the room and it's going to happen. So Miko says, TV in the video background that, for example, shows a bunch of balloons, and slowly some of the balloons turn to the predicted color. The word is subliminal messaging on TV. Yeah, that kind of makes sense, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Stu Batman says, I could do with him seeing my wife get her out of her wheelchair, get walking again. Well, did you see the Faith Healer episode that he did?
Yeah, that was fun.
Where he exposed the methods of faith healers, and a lot of it are people called on stage who aren't fully disabled, so they can walk, but like it causes them a lot of pain. But when they get up on stage, they have like this adrenaline rush, and when the preacher is saying you can walk and thousands of people are screaming, they will just stand up and walk. And then it was James Randi I went to see, and he did a talk. And if you haven't seen An Honest Liar on Netflix, go and watch it immediately. But I have a funny story about that, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, not about him, about something that happened in Canada.
Love James Randi.
Wow.
This is a really old one.
Well, he talked about that in America, they have a lot of these faith healers and a lot of these evangelists or whatever that say, send me $1 million and I'll cure you. And anyway, they have a warehouse in one part of America, like a huge air hangar filled with wheelchairs and crutches and implements that people who are disabled use from this one particular faith healer, because they have to keep them because people will walk on stage or they will stand up for the first time in a couple of years. And, you know, the adrenaline takes over. And eventually after the show, they will get a phone call. I need to pick up my wheelchair because it didn't
work. His, I mean, yeah, An Honest Liar is pretty much a perfect documentary.
Yeah, it is. Let me do a story about that. It's got nothing to do with the documentary itself. I was flying to Toronto and I was on a flight with Daniel Madison. And we're queuing through security. And for whatever reason, I always get stopped in security for like hours at a time as well, like LAX and things. So I was going through with Madison and I was so happy I was with Madison because he, like, you know, I didn't even have a tattoo back then. I was like this chubby little faced boy and he looked like you know, just like this rock star junky guy. So I was like, oh, sick, they're gonna stop Madison for a change and I'm gonna just straight through. Anyway, he waltzed through like he was floating on air. And I got stopped again by security. So they were interviewing me and they were asking me all these questions. And they said, like, what do you do? And I said, oh, I create magic. I'm a magician. And the guy stopped. And I didn't know about this documentary at the time. And the guy stopped. The security guard stared me straight in the eye. And he was like, have you seen it? And I was like, no. And he goes, that thing. And he was like, I was like, what? And he went, and he like looked for a bit longer than was like the right time, and it was just like An Honest Liar. And I thought he was accusing me of being an honest liar for being there or something. So I didn't know what he meant. And I was like, what? And I was like, whoa, no, hang on, mate. I was starting to explain that I'm just there. And he's like, the documentary about the guy. And I was like, oh, okay. No, I have no idea. But I thought he was calling me an honest liar. And because I was all like tired after the 14-hour flight and everything, I was annoyed that Madison got through and I didn't, and I don't look like that. That yeah, so that's my honest liar story.
It does sound quite sinister. An honest liar. I'm one of the chosen few to have very bad luck in airports as well. I don't know what it could be about me, but I look like someone who they don't like, I think.
Well, is it because they wonder why you're flying via airplane when Aquaman can swim quicker?
yeah, they're wondering what happened. Like, why are you so fat all of a sudden? Why'd you get uglier?
Aqualad.
The interesting stuff with that James Randi documentary is all the weird stuff around, what's the guy's name? Strange mustache, bit of a bowl cut, wears tracksuits. Is it Hydrix? Something Hydrix? He's one of the guys who went on and said he had psychic energy powers and he could move pencils. And then, you know,
is he the guy who's like from the 70s that did that?
Yeah.
He's in prison.
And for very bad things.
He's a diddler. But,
yeah, he was a diddler. But the interesting thing is, so they would have like a bunch of people in the car with him because he'd managed to convince them that, like, looking into his eyes, he could control their minds and stuff. So there'd be like a bunch of FBI agents sitting in the car with him, like all making sure no, like there was no one person looking at him at the same time. And they based an episode of The X-Files off him, a guy who can control minds.
I'm glad that's what they based it off, not the other stuff.
Yeah, thankfully.
Doodle 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 doodle. You know, this is what I'm saying, right, man? Like back then, Uri Geller, that guy, these people could outlandishly claim to have these crazy powers, and it's not that the world was not as intelligent. In fact, I oftentimes believe that the human race has declined in intelligence in a lot of areas, but we have so much more information about these oddities and party tricks and stuff like that than there were ever before. What I mean?
Yeah, dude, look how far Banachek got. in convincing the US government and like actual teams of scientific research people that he had psychic abilities.
Yeah.
They were just having a little bit of an undercover laugh. Like,
well, you know, crazy. A great example is Banachek, and one of our founding fathers of mentalism. But from where he went in terms of convincing the government up until his recent or modern day era Joe Rogan appearance, where 20 years ago, 10 years ago, even, I don't believe Rogan would have been as privy or as savvy to half of the stuff he did, purely because of, and I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's bad that people are up to date on the methods that they know about now. It just makes, it forces us to be better. That's why when Blaine went on there, I'm not saying Blaine or Banachek are better, maybe because of how Banachek appeared on there, Blaine decided to take a different approach.
Yeah.
But the magic that Blaine chose to do was essentially bulletproof.
Yeah.
And stuff which is not widely shown and talked about. Whereas what Banachek did is, it is a lot more common knowledge, or at least I would say common knowledge to an extent. And I think that's a great example of where we are with technology and why potentially things like a standard piece of visual magic, which would have worked 10 years ago when our eyes are not as well trained to spot oddities or imperfections, would have used to fly, now anymore potentially won't.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I always love with mentalism the kind of gymnastics that a participant or spectator will go through to try and figure out how something has been done. And whatever they come up with is always so much more impressive than the actual method.
Have you ever had a spectator come up with a better method?
Better concepts, and never actually like a fully fledged method, but you know, interesting concepts. But I think I was saying the last episode we did live as well, I think I was saying then, sometimes you just take credit for the way better idea that they've come up with. You're like, yeah, that's right, that's exactly what I did. I planted a number 7 somewhere near the door, and I did this, and yep, you're right, you got me. I've been following you for a year, and I've been writing down everything you do. Perfect. Yep, that's what I've done.
I often like to try to think on my toes as best I can, not particularly if I can, but if somebody has a guess at a method, I'll try my best to be like, oh, well, if that's the method, actually, I'll show you that I don't even use that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I'll try to have like one or two backup methods. Like, for example, if someone see me do a double lift, or they thought they did, and they said, oh, you had 2 cards there, I'm sure you did, then I would say, oh, I'm so sorry. I mean, look at it. It's 1 card. I'd let them look at it and say, watch very close. Look, we'll take the 1 card, place it in.
Hmm.
Now, like, I didn't have 2 there, you know, something like that. Or even like a terrible top change that I can't do very well. Anything in between.
Yeah, it's super easy for billet stuff. It's so, so easy for billet stuff to just run the gauntlet of methods and techniques for peaks. When someone says, oh, it's the wallet. Okay, we'll take away the wallet. Oh, it's something to do with the pen. Okay, have someone got a pencil or an eyeliner I can use?
Yeah. Well, do you have to write it down? Cognito, hello.
Yeah.
but hour in to our first proper live stream. So not live from camera, because the tricky part about this was getting it live through Zoom. So Jake is in Liverpool, I'm in Wales, but we seem to have gotten this far. So do we have any readers' questions?
I can have a little look-see, yeah.
These are predetermined questions, or predefined questions that people have sent into our Facebook group and our Society of Secrets Discord.
I didn't have these prepared ahead of time, sorry, just because I thought, because it was live, we'd kind of be going off the questions sent in, but I can have a little look.
Yeah, whilst you're doing that, the way, people, we decided to create some Black Art Podcast merch, which we're super excited about. So I'm going to drop some here for you all to take a look at. Some pretty cool stuff. T-shirts and hoodies and some Black Art stickers. This is the Hand of Glory design that we're going
to. Yeah. Actually, before we get into questions, very, very quickly, It is just the one design at the moment, but on obviously there's different garments. Oh, it is the coolest little artifact and story ever.
Do you want to tell the story of the hand? The story of glory?
The story of glory. This is like a kind of mythical occult object that I've been obsessed with since I was a child. Like, absolutely obsessed with. I saw it in a cartoon, like Scooby-Doo or something like that. And then I read about it in a book. I read about it in a Jeremy Dyson book called The Haunted Book at some point, about 10 years ago, maybe. And there is actually one of them that exists down in a museum in Whitby, I think it is. But essentially, it is the severed hand of a felon, usually cut from their body whilst they're hung at the gallows. There's a bunch of different mythology and folklore around it, so there's different versions, but the main essence of it is that this is an object, a magical object, that can aid burglary or breaking and entering through a couple of different means, whether that's forcing the people inside the house to fall asleep instantly, or to not be able to see you, or to open any lock. It's a burglar is, I can't say that word, it's a tool for deception.
Yeah, and apparently the people inside the house will fall into a deep sleep if the user permits it to, and it helps you break in and get out without being seen, and the hand of a cut-off criminal. And there's something mystical about it. We love the representation of it, so we decided to put our own design onto some T-shirts, and the hand of morning glory, says Sam Coleman. Yeah. Brilliant.
Beautiful.
It's just Sam's hand that we modelled that on. So...
It's just got that folklore spice to it, doesn't it?
We'll do a proper episode on it, and we'll brainstorm some of the ideas that we have around it for incorporating it into some effects. But for you, those of you that are here listening now, you can totally check it out whilst we're on this call. I could just see in the thumbnail in on YouTube, because we're like a delay. You just going, it's like spicy.
So good friend of the show, Kevin Oust, sent a message a little while back asking, do you prefer creating magic alone or with others? I usually start by myself, but finish with someone I trust. Sounds like my sex life. Actually, sorry, you're on YouTube.
It's okay. Shouldn't be
making those jokes.
How do you prefer to create? Solo or...
I guess it depends what the effect is, because there are certain things where maybe when you've been working on it a long time, you know, and like a seed of an idea that you had 8 years ago and you've kept super close to your chest because it is so, there's potential there and you just don't want to let it out. I mean, it kind of goes out the window when you become quite good friends with people who are in the same industry, because I think I've definitely told you a lot of some of my more secretive stuff that I haven't really written too much about. I think it depends on the effect, and it depends when you have the idea, and it depends if the other person is as excited as you are about it. There's some awesome stuff that we've came up with together that I couldn't imagine doing by myself, and then there's stuff that maybe you're not so interested in that I've made, that if you were involved with it, you'd be able to give me some good advice, but you wouldn't be passionate about it. It just depends on the effect, doesn't it?
100%. You know, what I find is that I'm a better creator when it comes to coming up with a unique method, like a very original type of method.
Yeah.
That I tend to do solo, because it sort of will, those tend to come to me when I'm quiet, when I'm silent. But I definitely feel the best magic that I work on comes from collaborative things, like working alongside you on ideas and people like Javier. It's just that to expect yourself to be the best creator and be able to view everything you do from 360 degrees is naive, unless, you know, there are some creators that are really, really good, but I think the day that I sort of gave over or dropped my ego and started to work a lot more collaboratively. I also didn't communicate a lot much when I was much younger in my creative like career. So I lived out in the sticks. So like a lot of people like live close to magicians, and like you live next to, you know, there's probably like 10, 20 magicians in your city alone, and you can meet up whenever you want. Zero in my town, you know? And so a lot of it, like I'm sort of like Pavlovian conditioned to create silently. But the minute I started to work more collaboratively is when I found my magic would just exponentially improve. Because yeah, there's, I sort of, a lot of the time I see the way I create is quite modular and mechanical in a way. And like, for example, working with people like you, what you bring is good ideas, but also these like amazing, like approach, not what's the word I'm looking for, but it's the, you bring like these themes and concepts and script in that takes something which could just be a good visual and you can turn it into a piece of magic, which I find is something I can't do alone. Or like working with someone like Javier and Craig, guys that, because they perform so much, they know what you can and can't get away with. And
yeah,
you know, yeah, collaborative for sure. But I find that the main crux of a method normally, when it's a very unique method, comes from solitude.
That makes sense. I mean, there's kind of like the undeniable statistic. If there are two people working on something, it's like if you're putting 100% of your effort into it and someone else is putting 100% effort into it, you've got something that's being worked on 200% effort. Like it's kind of silly to think, what's the saying, you know, a problem shared is a problem halved.
Very, very true. Yeah.
It's silly it's hard to think you're not going to get more.
If your effect has a crease in it, you know, an imperfection in it, or it's got 10, or if you've got a pipe in the house that's bursting from different areas, you can't stop all the blockages at once. So, yeah. And you're not going to see all of them at all. If you're only looking at it from one angle, somebody has to see it from the other angle to see maybe the pipe has burst behind what you can see. And yeah, it's just the way it is. Very quickly, we have a question here from Shane McDonald, who says, off topic, but what way would you recommend to get into mentalism? Just getting back into magic, not really sure where to start on a lot of things.
I mean, how faux pas, how is it to say the classics? Because it depends what you're looking for in mentalism as well. I think Foundations...
Louis Sabal has a new set out, right?
Yeah. On Mindhouse, there's Mentalism for Beginners. Go buy that. It's great.
It's probably the perfect thing. Let's find a link. I'm such a fan of Mindhouse, by the way, dude.
He put out another release last night, which is really fun. It's only a short one. It's great.
This is probably the best thing you can get in Magic for Beginners right now. There is a link. We have no affiliation. Like Lewis, I know Lewis. He's a friend of mine. I've known him for years. We don't talk very often because, you know, he's usually traveling and things, but and I have no affiliation with this, so I don't get any kickback from sharing this with you. It's just genuinely, if you are looking to get into mentalism and you are what you consider a beginner, this is brand new. It's brilliant. And Lewis has this ability to cut through the bullshit and show you just what the stuff is that's good.
Yeah. If you're not interested in, you know, Theodore Hahnemann or Tony Corinda or anything like that, but I would recommend some foundational work purely because that helps you come up with your own stuff. It's all the building blocks, right? You can't make your cool little Lego Boba Fett thing unless you have some Lego bricks.
Exactly. But was there any more questions in the Discord chat?
Yeah, George Crothers asked how I got my locks so luscious and flowing, but I'm going to ignore that question because I don't want to give away my shampoo secrets.
Oh, scoundrel.
I just don't wash my hair. where else do we get questions from again? I produce.
And we get this from the chat on YouTube too. But we've been going for over an hour. I don't know, but Stu Batman says I saw Penn and Teller a few weeks ago, and they seem to do every kind of magic, visual, mentalism, illusions, and card magic. I actually talked about this on the Magic Podcast with Craig this morning, and the best piece of advice I ever took. Not directly from them, but just like literally took the advice that I heard them talking about was I think it was their manager that told them, don't advertise yourselves on your in your Broadway show as magicians. Yeah. Just whatever the show name is, like, you know, entertaining 2 hours on stage or whatever it's called, don't put the word magician in there because it can... There was a plethora of reasons, but the reasons I'm assuming why it was so smart, and they do talk about it in other places, that some people can decide they don't like magic before they see it.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't know the magicians and they just know it's an entertaining show, you're more likely to go. And also then they're not pigeonholed, they right? They can, that's yeah. why they can do everything.
Yeah. It's a super good point. And it's such a weird, like a double-edged sword, because if you advertise yourself as this amazing entertainer, what about the people who are only out there looking for things that say magic in them? And like, where's the best magic show? This guy's an amazing entertainer. I don't care. But
yeah, exactly. I just want to go out for a good evening. And they happen to then see some of the best, two of the best magicians ever that have ever lived. Now they like magic.
Yeah.
So that's the cool way of doing it, I suppose.
Penn and Teller have got a lot of... need a lot of praise for their mission to convert so many people into fans, because how many shows did they have in like the 90s? And there was a lot of Penn and Teller on TV at one point.
I think it's Alki says, what's your favorite impossible giveaway at the end of an effect? Do you know, this is another funny one. A lot of magicians confuse this saying too. It's they leave them with an impossible object, and oftentimes the object is not impossible. Like, even if it's like a mismade torn and restored card or something like that, that's not impossible. That absolutely can be made. What I deem as impossible are things that, like, a Linkin rubber band. I do Linkin rubber bands quite a lot. It is possible to have them made in a factory, but not like, not in the way that other impossible objects. Or when someone just has like a card that's signed after an ambitious card, leave them with an impossible souvenir. It's like, that's not impossible, that's just a sign. You know, I'm being very broad here, but there's often, if you don't stop to examine when someone says it's an impossible object, sometimes they're just not.
Yeah, I'm not too interested in the impossibility of an object. I'm more interested in like the sentimentality of an object. And
yours is good. The thing you do is great.
What do I do?
With the ring?
Oh, don't give away my secrets.
I'm not saying what it is. I'm just saying it's with a ring.
No, it's zero secrets. I buy thousands and thousands of silver rings from AliExpress and I pretend that they have some kind of a meaning to me and give them away.
But how great is that to say, like, oh, this is a very personal thing to me. You know what? You can keep it. Oh, come on.
Yeah. And they are cool rings as well.
Really?
Oh.
Ooh. See, that's kind of an impossible object. There's no seam. There's no way it could have been made. That's more of a... What's the one when people say a bent coin is an impossible object? It's not. It's not impossible to bend a coin.
No.
If you give me... If I give a spectator a coin and said, you, if you can... Like, I bet you can't bend it, they'll bend it. But if I give them a rubber band and a ring and I said, link those two together, they could not do that.
Mm.
You know, and that's the difference between impossible objects and non-impossible objects.
Yeah. I do love a little handout, a souvenir. I have, in my wallet, I have two little notes.
Two bands.
Oh, that's cool. Sorry, Spotify, but you're missing something awesome here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry, Spotify.
In my wallet, I have two little handwritten notes. Usually on cards, sometimes on paper. I replace them as and when. But one of them is the long shot card and one of them is the surefire card. And it's essentially that one of them will say, I've got a feeling that I'm going to meet a redheaded woman who is a Gemini. Something, you know, absolutely insane. If you talk to enough people, one day you will hand out that card and you'll have to make another one. And then I have the surefire one. And I do like to end things, if it's a kind of a reading or if there's any kind of mystical presentation, I like to end things by saying, you know, every morning when I wake up, I try and envision the type of people that I'll see throughout my day. And it doesn't always happen. I don't always meet the type of person that I think I'm going to meet, but I think that you might be the person I was meant to meet today. And so pull out this little note in my wallet and I can't remember it verbatim, but I can't speak to that. I can't remember it word for word, but essentially it says, you know, you hand it to them, give it to them, and it'll say like either "Hey sister" or "Hey brother" or something on it, and it'll say, you know, "You're a beautiful person. You like to dream, but your practicality means that you've put your dreams on the back burner recently. And I hope that you can change that. I hope that you can embrace your dreams and see that that's what makes you unique to everyone else, because you are different. You are special." And then it says some other stuff in it that's really
You've just given me an amazing idea, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to tell you off air.
Oh, it is an amazing idea then.
Yeah.
I think it ends up by saying stuff like, you know, magic is out there. Every day we see it. It's just waiting for us. And it's some soppy stuff. But, you know, I took my time writing it. But I just write it out whenever I need to replace it. It's the same thing. But it means a lot to people when they get something that says, you know, "No, you are beautiful. You're special. You're different. Don't give up on your dreams." Like, there's a lot out there for you, and things are only going to get better and better and better. And people do hold on to that. I can't say this for sure, but I feel like some of the people that I've given these little notes to would like it a little bit more than they would like a signed card. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, letting someone keep their own signed card is always an odd one for me, because it's the memory they're keeping, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
But it's not
if
impossible.
Anything, I like keeping someone's signed card. If I ask someone to sign a card, I ask them if I can keep it.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, it's a memory for everyone, isn't it? Mm. But it's better to have that memory be a lot more obvious or meaningful.
Yeah.
Alki says, "For me, I define impossible as being something that makes your brain reset a bit, just looking at it and become mind-blowing in the context of the routine." Linking stuff is a good example, yeah. My favorite trick of all time is Rory Adams. When we had paper notes, he would do angle zero, where you'd tear the corner off a £5 or £10, £20 note and put it inside the layers of a real £20 note. And I would do that. I must have made that trick up 100 times to perform. Best trick ever. Going off of that, though, I'm going to forget the idea if I don't tell you soon. So we've been going for an hour and a quarter. It's absolutely roasting here in this office. I can't stick it any longer. I'm going to die. It's too hot.
Yeah, no, same. No, there is actually the chance that I might die. I am a curvier man. I'm a voluptuous male. I can't handle this heat.
Well, this is the reason why I'm so slick. And I shave all the... I don't shave. I'm like a little dolphin. But no, what people don't realize, and I was telling the guys at Murphy's this today, my boys, in the UK, it's not as hot as in America. It's only like 20, like right now it's like 21 degrees, which is like, what's that, 70, 80 F Fahrenheit? Not even that high, I don't think. But but we don't have any air conditioning. My house is a 100-year-old brick house. So these bricks heat up all day and then they radiate. So I'm struggling and I don't have I do have fans and stuff, but I'm not putting them on to blow all of you away. But anyway, guys, and dolls, folks, and folklore. It's been such a good episode.
Yeah, this has been fun. We should do them live a little more, I think. Maybe, you know,
every week live if everyone likes it.
Oh, I would miss when we get really, really into the weeds, though, and not distracted. Not that it's a bad thing to be distracted, because I love reading comments and stuff, but I would miss the super in-depth stuff. But yeah, I'm super down to do more live ones.
I'm super down. What do you guys think? Leave some comments down below. If you've made it this far, as always, and I can see some great people in here, Sam, Muppets on Med, Alki, Stu, Miko, Raven, anyone still watching, comment. When the stream ends on YouTube, because the live chat will disappear after the video. So wait for the video to finish in a moment. And then if you want to see us do more lives, please comment on the video, not in this live chat. Comment on the video. Look at that fan. Yeah. That you would love us to do more lives, or you'd like us to do more lives. Let us know how often you want to see more lives, whether you want to see it like every week or not, or once a month, whatever you think. Maybe special occasions. And we'll do it. We will do it.
Also, for the first time in the Facebook group, I think there's only like 60 people in the Facebook group.
That's great. Don't live promote it.
Oh, okay. I won't tell them about the really super secret stuff that was talked about.
I was saying that's great that we got 60 people because we don't promote it.
Oh, I thought you said don't promote it.
No, sorry. I mean, what I mean is that it's great that we even have anyone in it because we don't tell anyone about it.
Yeah, there's some cool people in there, dude. Craig Petty's in there.
Yeah, entirely. So what was you going to say about it? Sorry, I totally talked over you.
No, no, it's fine. It's fine. You always do. I don't care. I don't respect you anyway. It's okay. Me and David Peace did a little live in there the other day. It was kind of just a super relaxed hour and a half long chat when people were commenting and stuff. Just jamming ideas, talking. And you know, if you join up on the message, we can do some stuff like that where people can join in on little jams and things.
Hell yeah. Oh yeah. Get talk to Jake one-on-one, and even I'll try and drop in there somehow without a Facebook account. But I will. Anyway, folks, so thank you all so much for tuning in. Loads of lovely comments coming in. Go to theblackartco.co. What are you laughing at,
Jake? I'm laughing at Alki saying, in quotes, "I'm a voluptuous male," the Black Art Podcast 2023.
Yes.
That's the second t-shirt drop.
What are we? Are we the blackartco.com? Yeah, head to the blackartco.com, and there you can find all of our links, the YouTube, Spotify, Apple, other platforms, and the Facebook discussion group. Head to the blackartco.com, send some love, let us know if you want to do some more live streams in the comments, not in the live chat, and we will see you all next week.
We will, hopefully.
If we survive the heat. We only have the music.
Oh, there's people already.